This rather primitive strategy has done wonders for North Korea over the past 25 years.
North Korea launches another round of missiles. It's Tuesday, March 7th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you, too, to join us online right now at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Taiwan sailing to a possible new confrontation with China. Struggling to find work in China's Rust Belt. Looking to travel? Try Vietnam. And we look at mixed racial life in the United States. VOA Asia starts now. North Korea fired four more missiles into waters off of Japan's northwest coast on Monday, but early indications were they were not intercontinental ballistic missiles. South Korea said they traveled about 1,000 kilometers and reached an altitude of 260 kilometers. Japan said three reached its exclusive economic zone. Both Japan and South Korea condemned the latest launches, which are violations of past UN Security Council resolutions. The United States says it's ready to use the full range of capabilities at its disposal against what a spokesman called this growing threat. The North had threatened to take strong retaliatory measures as the United States and South Korea conducted annual joint military exercises. Last month, Pyongyang test-fired a new type of missile and vowed to continue launching new strategic weapons. Korea analyst Sung-Yun Lee of Tufts University tells VOA's Victor Beatty that while the military drills may be one reason for these launches, they may also be a further challenge to the new administration of President Donald Trump.
By trying to paint it into a corner with another small escalation, get the Trump administration to sort of accept North Korea's de facto provocative ways, accept it as a de facto nuclear power. By escalating and then toning it down a bit and waiting to be compensated politically and economically. And this rather primitive strategy has done wonders for North Korea over the past 25 years. Second, South Korea is in political chaos. Remind the South Korean public that you elect a hardliner like President Park Geun-hye, who is impeached. You dare to confront us, and you have more to pay for it than we do. Perhaps another objective is to showcase North Korea's capabilities. I believe that North Korea's blatant murder in Malaysia at an international airport of the leader's half-brother, in some ways, it must have been a demonstration to the world of North Korea's advanced chemical weapons capabilities.
What kind of reaction do you expect from the international community on these latest launches?
Well, we only have the past precedents to go by. This is, I guess, in a conventional way of looking at international relations, not a major provocation. So, as North Korea has done it over the past 25 years, probably they will walk scot-free, walk away with, you know, with this another round of blatant violation of many UN Security Council resolutions.
The RAND Corporation's Bruce Bennett, however, believes the North's real aim was directed at traditional ally and neighbor China, as was the apparent North Korean assassination of Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Malaysia last month.
You don't need a missile that can fly as long as these missiles flew to hit anywhere in South Korea. And North Korea has been very upset about the Chinese attitude on its coal import cutoff from North Korean coal. So, yeah, this was a launch that was intended to defy the United States and South Korea for doing the ongoing exercises, but it was also clearly pointed at China.
North Korea can't afford to alienate China, can it?
It went ahead and killed Kim Jong-nam, apparently. From everything that can be told, it was North Korea that was responsible. And China had been very clear to North Korea not to do that and that it was trying to protect him. So this is a case of multiple acts by North Korea of defiance. I think North Korea is taking a chance, but the real question will be how does China respond? Because if you want to deter a country like North Korea, you've got to prove to them that the cost of taking such actions is greater than the benefit. China usually doesn't do that.
Malaysia's prime minister said his government did not receive an apology from the North Korean ambassador for questioning the credibility of the Malaysian investigation into the death of Kim Jong-nam. He was ordered to leave the country on Monday. Sung Yung-yi said if Kuala Lumpur really wanted to strike back, it could have severed diplomatic ties. Bruce Bennett said the North Korean diplomat may not receive a warm welcome back in Pyongyang because he was not able to prevent an autopsy and gain control of the body. Authorities said Kim Jong-nam died from the effects of VX nerve gas. Two women, one Vietnamese and the other Indonesian, have so far been charged with murder. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. North Korea missile test not likely an ICBM. South Korea special prosecutor says president and friend received bribes from Samsung. China taking political risks for economic reforms and foreign investments. Jostling contenders for party elite play it safe at China Parliament. Vietnamese rally to raise money for women accused in Kim death. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen is risking a new showdown with Beijing by stepping up military capabilities to protect holdings in the widely contested South China Sea. Taiwan's defense minister told parliament in Taipei last week that the Navy will increase its patrols in the 3.5 million square kilometer body of water because of China's own growing military might. He said Taiwan's Navy will train with the Air Force and use its increased regular South China Sea patrols for humanitarian rescue drills and to protect Taiwanese boats trawling for fish or ferrying supplies. Experts like Ross Feingold, Taipei-based analyst with an American political consultancy, says the use of military units to enforce Taiwan's access to the resource-rich sea off of its southwest coast may prompt a backlash from Beijing because of poor existing relations and little external support.
In response to this, if China did something in the South China Sea, more exercises, more ships passing through, that's a marginal change from the status quo. But if it wants to express its displeasure at Taiwan, it could do more of the kinds of exercises it's been doing recently around Taiwan Island, even though Taiwan Island is not relevant really to the South China Sea dispute.
China claims Taiwan as part of its Chinese territory, even though Taiwan has been self-ruled since the 1940s. That seven-decade squeeze by China has prevented Taiwan any formal diplomacy in Asia. President Tsai talked briefly about security in December with U.S. President Donald Trump, but Trump has shown no further sign of support. In December and January, China's aircraft carrier circled Taiwan, and last week, it sent a military aircraft into waters close to Japan's outlying islands and due east of Taiwan. The Defense Ministry monitored both of those moves. Liu Fuquo, International Relations Research Fellow at National Chengchi University in Taipei, says that Beijing will factor its current struggle with Taiwan into any response Taiwan might make in the sea.
President Tsai Ing-wen, even if other senior officials spoke so much about different goals of South China Sea policy, every time it comes to her, she said that no change. And this is a policy our government currently is taking. I just hope that there will not have any things that she will change, because it has a closer links with cross-strait relations.
Taiwan now holds Taiping Island. That's the largest of the Spratly Island chain, as well as a nearby sandbar. Taiping is unusually well-developed. It has a Coast Guard base, meteorological research equipment, and a collection of solar panels. President Tsai may ultimately carry on her predecessor's effort to develop the island as a base for solar energy, marine research, and humanitarian rescues, according to scholars. While Taiping measures just 1,400 meters long and 400 meters across, former Defense Minister Andrew Yang says that it's still run by well-trained military people.
The main approach is how to fully utilize our soft powers on the Spratly. Instead of increasing the military installations. In the future, I think this is going to be increasingly enhanced, specifically the scientific and the maritime research activities.
Amid talks of greater sea patrols, President Tsai has shown no signs of trying to extend control over the sea, which is prized for fisheries, undersea fossil fuel reserves, and marine shipping lanes. Happening now in Asia, Malaysia has rebuked North Korea's ambassador and declared him persona non grata over comments made about Kim Jong-nam's murder investigation. North Korea's news agency reports Pyongyang will expel Malaysia's envoy in response. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. If you happen to live in northeastern China, you've likely seen the effects of China's slowing economy. It's now down to growth rates seen unseen in more than 25 years. And millions enter the workforce each year or are looking for work after they've been laid off. The country now under increasing pressure to create jobs. While coastal cities such as Shanghai and Guangzhou and the capital of Beijing have long been magnets for those seeking better jobs and higher wages, areas such as China's Northeast Rust Belt are struggling to find ways to keep talent at home. VOA's Bill Ide had the job of visiting Shenyang, the capital of northeastern Liaoning province, to find out more.
Visit a job fair in Shenyang and you get a small taste of this country's huge appetite for jobs. China aims to create more than 11 million new jobs this year. The fair we visited was one of several on a recent Saturday. Many we spoke with were concerned about the slowing economy and its dampening impact on jobs.
The outlook now for jobs is not as good as a few years ago, and I think that's because the economy is not that great.
I'm worried about finding work. If I can't find a job here, I'll most likely go somewhere else to work.
Heavy industry and state-owned enterprises have long dominated the economy in China's northeast, and that has contributed to the ongoing exodus of talent to other parts of the country. Also, money and who you know is more important than skill, says one medical student surnamed Ni. Ni says he will look for work elsewhere after graduation.
Whether it is the government, schools, or hospitals, there's too much focus on connections and favors. What you can do is not important, and there's no room to put your talents to good use.
Overcoming corruption is no small task. However, a vote-buying scandal last year in Liaoning province, the worst since the Communist Party came to power, may be providing an opportunity to clean up the problem. Liaoning officials have pledged to put an end to the practice and spoke openly about the scandal at a meeting in Beijing Sunday, highlighting its political and economic impact.
We're overly reliant on heavy industries. Innovation and creativity is lacking. The impact on the environment is not good, and talent is not being put to its best use.
While some are hopeful the government's pledge to clean up the environment will bring about change, the region's heavy emphasis on infrastructure as a model for jobs and growth has some waiting for clearer signals. Bill Ide, VOA News, Shenyang.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Nearly a quarter of South Korea's Lotte stores in China have been shuttered for alleged fire safety regulations. The stores have been having trouble in China after agreeing to a land swap deal for a U.S. missile defense system. 2015 Lotte sales in China amounted to $2.6 billion. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues as a record 2.7 million Chinese tourists arrived in Vietnam in 2016. And like other Southeast Asian countries, Vietnam is seeking to capitalize on its tourism industry. VOA Asia's Steve Miller spoke with VOA Vietnamese service reporter Truong Nguyen about the growing tourism efforts in Vietnam and what the country offers visitors.
Actually, Vietnam is trying very hard to draw tourists to the country because tourism is one of the main industries in the country. Because Vietnam, they have a lot of beautiful sceneries.
With Vietnam being in such close proximity to China, about what percentage of Vietnam's tourism comes from China?
The number of Chinese tourists to Vietnam last year was at a record number of nearly 3 million. That accounts 30% of the total number of foreign tourists to Vietnam.
Are there any concerns about relying too heavily on one nation to make up the tourism pool?
Obviously, Vietnam trying to diversify tourists to the country. And I actually talked to senior officers at the tourism department of Vietnam, and he told me that he and his staff try to diversify foreign tourists to Vietnam.
What about restaurateurs and other locals? I mean, a few years ago, there were some protests regarding some Chinese businesses in Vietnam over activities in disputed waters in the South China Sea. What do they think about this initiative?
Because of the risk that Chinese tourists might pose to the country. For example, in 2014, when China brought its huge oil rig into the waters that Vietnam consider is continental self. Huge protests happened, and China decided to ask its citizens to pull out from Vietnam, and that make huge impact on tourism in Vietnam. And that's why Vietnamese government tried to diversify. A senior tourist official told me that they try to diversify the source of tourists, foreign tourists, to Vietnam so that when something like that happens, there will not be severe impact. And he also told me that one part of foreign tourists to Vietnam, like China, will not have an overall huge impact on the country.
Truong Nguyen is from our Vietnamese service, joining me here in the studio. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Developing at this hour in Asia, South Korea is quadrupling its reward fee up to ₩1 billion for defectors from North Korea who are willing to hand over classified information on the reclusive country's military secrets. The Ministry of Unification says a bill outlining the changes is set to be submitted for approval. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the number of mixed-race Americans is growing three times faster than the U.S. population as a whole. That's according to the Pew Research Center. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles that many mixed-race Americans experience life in a way that's very different from that of any other minority group in the United States.
Being of mixed race and in an interracial marriage comes with sometimes infuriating experiences for Delia Douglas.
Especially in the first 3 years of my daughter's life, people often would stop and ask me if I was a nanny. And there were days where that would be incredibly frustrating.
Douglas is white, African American, and Native American. Their daughter Soleil looks more like her white dad.
I think she's surprised both of us. I never expected her to have golden blonde hair.
Life has not always been easy for Douglas's brother, Ronnie Nels, who shares her mixed race background.
You know, I was pulled over, I think, once a month for a year, and just asking where I was headed and what I was doing.
Pew Research finds 69% of mixed race Americans with black as part of their racial makeup say most people view them as black, and their experience is more similar to the black community. But many multiracial Americans find Los Angeles is more accepting, including Damona Hoffman, who is Russian Jewish and African American.
I found actually that it was where my people were, because there were so many biracial people that were suddenly in my orbit that I really hadn't seen before growing up in the Midwest.
That is why many mixed-race children attend preschools that are ethnically diverse, such as World City Center, where 30% of the students are multiracial. Vivian Arlotto, who was Korean and Belgian and married to a white American, sent her son here.
I grew up in a really homogenous neighborhood and felt like the other. So it was important for my son to be in a place where he felt normal.
Sonia Smith Kang's husband is Korean American with immigrant parents.
Language was definitely an important part for me because I wanted them to speak Korean so they could communicate with my parents.
At WorldSpeak, a multilingual immersion school, 80% of the students are of mixed race. The school's founder says children who come from a multi-ethnic background have one big advantage.
They have more empathy towards other multiracial and multilingual children. They have more curiosity towards multiracial differences and acceptance.
Many mixed-race Americans see a growing social acceptance of people of mixed backgrounds.
You know, we went from knowing all, I think, five other families that were mixed in the Valley to a mixed man being the president. That's an awesome thing.
Compared to the 1970s, when only 1% of children were of mixed race, that number has now grown to 10% nationwide. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
We're glad that you're a part of the VOA Asia family and have joined us today. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia. You know, we're also a podcast. You can download us and take us wherever you go. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Dave Magnus, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our wonderful VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Illicitly used synthetic drugs are chemically produced psychoactive substances that mimic the effects of illegal narcotics, which have been altered just enough to avoid classification as illegal. And this is one reason why these chemicals are dangerous. Since the formula for any given drug is constantly changing to stay one step ahead of the law, it is challenging to predict the effects the new chemical will have on the user's body. Indeed, synthetic drugs are among the most destructive substances on the illicit market, especially synthetic opioids. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in 2015, over 33,000 overdose deaths in the U.S. involved prescription or illicit opioids, an increase of nearly 60% over the last 5 years, and nearly 60% of those deaths involved heroin or synthetic opioids like fentanyl. Despite this, there is every indication that the manufacture and availability of these substances are increasing. Transnational criminal organizations dealing with illicit drugs are relying increasingly on synthetic products to harm our societies. They operate complex supply and distribution networks that cross multiple international boundaries, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, Luis Arriaga, at the Bangkok 3 conference in late February. The United Nations reports that more than 700 new psychoactive substances have emerged over the last 5 years. And what we know about these substances is disconcerting and challenging because the international architecture set up to treat drug abuse and control the spread of those substances has not kept pace. We must adapt and use all the tools at our disposal. Together, the international community must take 4 measures, said Mr. Arriaga. First, we must reduce the number of first-time users, particularly the young, through education, prevention, and treatment. Second, we must share information on new substances across borders to prepare for emerging trends. Third, we must develop flexible domestic systems that can handle the influx of new drugs. And finally, we must continue to use the international illicit drug control treaties to defend against the most prevalent and dangerous substances. Psychoactive substances require urgent attention from the international community, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Arriaga. Decades of our mutual experience battling the drug problem have shown that voluntary international cooperation is vitally important.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.